their fall. Next time, though, I hope it won't involve making quite so big a mess. I liked this saloon. I'll do my best, Roxilium said. I intend to change things out here. If not the whole Ruffs, then at least this town. Well, Lassie said, walking over to Granite Joe's corpse, I'm sure that if any evil pianos were thinking of attacking the city, they'll have second thoughts now, considering your prowess with that pistol. Waxillium winced. You saw that, did you? Rarely seen such a feat, she said, kneeling and going through Joe's pockets. 3 shots, 3 different notes. Not a single bandit down. That takes skill. Maybe you should spend a little less time with your thing and more with your gun. Now that sounded dirty. Good. I hate being crass by accident. She came out with Joe's pocketbook and smiled, tossing it up and catching it. Above, in the hole Waxillium had made, an equine head poked out, followed by a smaller teenage one in an oversized bowler hat. Where had he gotten that? Destroyer blustered in greeting. Sure. Now you come, Waxillium said. Stupid horse. Actually, Lassie said, seems to me like staying away from you during a gunfight makes her a pretty damn smart horse. Waxillium smiled and held out his hand to Lassie. She took it and he pulled her close. Then he lifted them out of the wreckage on a line of blue light. Part 1 17 years later. Winsting smiled to himself as he watched the setting sun. It was an ideal evening to auction himself off. "We have my safe room ready?" Winsting asked, lightly gripping the balcony banister. "Just in case."
"Yes, my lord."
Flog wore his silly Ruff's hat along with a duster, though he'd never been outside of the Ellendale Basin. The man was an excellent bodyguard, despite his terrible fashion sense, but Winsting made certain to pull on the man's emotions anyway, subtly enhancing Flog's sense of loyalty. One could never be too careful.
"My lord,"
Flog asked, glancing toward the chamber behind them.
"They're all here, my lord. Are you ready?"
Not turning away from the setting sun, Winsting raised a finger to hush the bodyguard. The balcony, in the 4th octant of Ellendale, overlooked the canal and the hub of the city, so he had a nice view of the field of rebirth. Long shadows stretched from the statues of the Ascendant Warrior and the Last Emperor in the Green Park, where, according to fanciful legend, their corpses had been discovered following the Great Catasandra and the Final Ascension. The air was muggy, slightly tempered by a cool breeze off Hamandar Bay, a couple of miles to the west. Winsting tapped his fingers on the balcony railing, patiently sending out pulses of alomantic power to shape the emotions of those in the room behind him. Or at least any foolish enough not to be wearing their aluminum-lined hats.
"Any moment now?"
Initially appearing as pinprick spots in the air, mist grew before him, spreading like frost across a window. Tendrils stretched and spun about one another, becoming streams, then rivers of motion. Currents shifting and blanketing the city, engulfing it, consuming it.
"A misty night," Flog said. "That's bad luck, it is."
"Don't be a fool," Winsting said, adjusting his cravat.
"He's watching us," Flog said. "The mists are his eyes, my lord. Sure as ruin, that is."
"Superstitious nonsense."
Winsting turned and strode into the room. Behind him, Flog shut the doors before the mists could seep into the party. The 2 dozen people, along with the inevitable bodyguards, who mingled and chatted there, were a select group. Not just important, but also very much at odds with one another, despite their deliberate smiles and meaningless small talk. He preferred to have rivals at events like this. Let them all see each other, and let each know the cost of losing the contest for his favor.
Winsting stepped among them. Unfortunately, many did wear hats whose aluminum linings would protect them from emotional allomancy, though he had personally assured each attendee that none of the others would have soothers or rioters with them. He'd said nothing of his own abilities, of course. So far as any of them knew, he wasn't an allomancer. He glanced across the room to where Bloom tended bar. The man shook his head. Nobody else in the room was burning any metals. Excellent. Winsting stepped up to the bar, then turned and raised his hands to draw everyone's attention. The gesture exposed the twinkling diamond cufflinks he wore on his stiff white shirt. The settings were wooden, of course.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he said, "welcome to our little auction. The bidding begins now, and it ends when I hear the offer I like most."
He said nothing more. Too much talk would kill the drama. Winsting took the drink one of his servers offered and stepped out to mingle, then hesitated as he looked over the crowd.
"Edwin Ladrian is not here," he said softly.
He refused to call the man by his silly moniker, Mr. Suit.
"No," Flog said. "I thought you said everyone had arrived."
"Everyone has said they were coming," Flog said.
He shuffled, uncomfortable. Winsting pursed his lips, but otherwise hid his disappointment. He'd been certain his offer had intrigued Edwin. Perhaps the man had bought out one of the other crime lords in the room. Something to consider. Winsting made his way to the central table, which held the nominal centerpiece of the evening. It was a painting of a reclining woman. Winsting had painted it himself, and he was getting better. The painting was worthless, but the men and women in this room would still offer him huge sums for it. The first one to approach him was Dowser, who ran most of the smuggling operations in the fifth octant. The 3 days of scrub on his cheeks was shadowed by a bowler hat, conspicuously he had not left in the cloakroom. A pretty woman on his arm and a sharp suit did little to clean up a man like Dowser. Winsting wrinkled his nose. Most everyone in the room was a despicable piece of trash, but the others had the decency not to look like it.
"It's ugly as sin," Dowser said, looking over the painting. "I can't believe this is what you're having us bid on. A little cheeky, isn't it?"
"And you'd rather I was completely forthright, Mr. Dowser," Winsting said. "You'd have me proclaim it far and wide, pay me, and in exchange you get my vote in the Senate for the next year?"
Dowser glanced to the sides, as if expecting the constables to burst into the room at any moment. Winsting smiled.
"You'll notice the shades of grey on her cheeks, a representation of the ashen nature of life in a pre-catasundric world, My finest work yet. Do you have an offer to get the bidding started?"
Dowser said nothing. He would eventually make a bid. Each person in this room had spent weeks posturing before agreeing to this meeting. Half were crime lords like Dowser. The others were Winsting's own counterparts, high lords and ladies from prominent noble houses, though no less corrupt than the crime lords.
"Aren't you frightened, Winsting?" asked the woman on Dowser's arm.
Winsting frowned. He didn't recognize her. Slender, with short golden hair and a doe-eyed expression, she was uncommonly tall.
"Frightened, my dear?" Winsting asked. "Of the people in this room?" "No," she said. "That your brother will find out what you do." "I assure you," Winsting said. "Replar knows exactly what I am." "The governor's own brother," the woman said, "asking for bribes." "If that truly surprises you, my dear," Winsting said, "then you have lived too sheltered a life. Far bigger fish than I have been sold on this market. When the next catch arrives, perhaps you will see."
That comment caught Dowser's attention. Winsting smiled as he saw the gears clicking behind Dowser's eyes.
"Yes," Winsting thought,
I did just imply that my brother himself might be open to your bribery. Perhaps that would up the man's offer.
Winston moved over to select some shrimp and quiche from a server's tray.
The woman with Dowser is a spy, Winston said softly to Flog, who was always at his elbow. Perhaps in constabulary employ.
Flog started.
My lord, we checked and double-checked each person attending.
Well, you missed one, Winston whispered. I'd bet my fortune on it. Follow her after the meeting. If she splits from Dowser for any reason, see that she meets with an accident.
Yes, my lord.
And Flog, Winston said, do be straightforward about it. I won't have you trying to find a place where the mists won't be watching. Understand?
Yes, my lord.
Excellent, Winston said, smiling broadly as he strolled over to Lord Hugh's entrone, cousin and confidant to the head of house entrone.
Winston spent an hour mingling, and slowly the bids started to come in. Some of the attendees were reluctant. They would rather have met him one-on-one, making their covert offers, than slipping back into Ellendale's underbelly. Crime lords and nobles alike, these all preferred to dance around a topic, not discuss it openly. But they did bid, and bid well. By the end of his first circuit of the room, Winston had to forcibly contain his excitement. No longer would he have to limit his spending. If his brother could... The gunshot was so unexpected, he at first assumed that one of the servers had broken something. But no, that crack was so sharp, so ear-splitting. He'd never heard a gun fired indoors before. He hadn't known just how stunning it could be. He gaped, the drink tumbling from his fingers as he tried to find the source of the shot. Another followed, then another. It became a storm, various sides firing at one another in a cacophony of death. Before he could cry for help, Flog had him by the arm, towing him toward the stairs down to the safe room. One of his other bodyguards stumbled against the doorway, looking with wide eyes at the blood on his shirt. Winston stared for too long at the dying man before Flog was able to tear him away and shove him into the stairwell.
"What's happening?"
Winston finally demanded as a guard slammed the door behind him and locked it. The bodyguards hurried him down the dim stairway, which was weakly lit by periodic electric lights.
"Who fired? What happened?"
"No way of knowing," Flog said.
Gunfire still sounded above.
"Happened too fast."
"Someone just started firing," another guard said.
"Might have been Dowser."
"No, it was Darm," another said. "I heard the first shot from his group."
Either way, it was a disaster. Winston saw his fortune dying a bloody death on the floor above them, and he felt sick as they finally reached the bottom of the stairs and a vault-like door, which Flog pushed him through.
"I'm going to go back up," Flog said. "See what I can salvage. Find out who caused this."
Winston nodded and shut the door, locking it from the inside. He settled into a chair to wait, fretting. The small bunker of a room had wine and other amenities, but he couldn't be bothered. He wrung his hands. What would his brother say? Rusts, what would the papers say? He'd have to keep this quiet somehow. Eventually, a knock came at the door, and Winston glanced through the peephole to see Flog. Behind him, a small force of bodyguards watched the stairwell. It seemed the gunfire had stopped, though from down here it had sounded only like faint popping. Winston opened the door.
"Well?"
"They're all dead."
"All of them?"
"Every last one," Flog said, walking into the room.
Winston sat heavily in his chair.
"Maybe that's good," he said,
searching for some glimmer of light in this dark disaster.
"Nobody can implicate us. Maybe we can just slip away, cover our tracks somehow?"
A daunting task. He owned this building. He'd be connected to these deaths. He'd need an alibi. Hell, he was going to have to go to his brother. This could cost him his seat, even if the general public never discovered what had happened. He slumped in his chair, frustrated.
"Well,"
he demanded,
"what do you think?"
In response, a pair of hands grabbed Winston by the hair, pulled his head back, and efficiently slit his exposed throat. 2.
I figure I should write one of these things, the small book read, to tell my side, not the side the historians will tell for me. I doubt they'll get it right. I don't know that I'd like them to anyhow. Wax tapped the book with the end of his pencil, then scribbled down a note to himself on a loose sheet.
"I'm thinking of inviting the Boris brothers to the wedding," Steris said from the couch opposite the one Wax sat upon.
He grunted, still reading. "I know Sayes doesn't approve of what I've done," the book continued. "But what did he expect me to do, knowing what I know?"
"The Boris brothers," Steris continued. "They're acquaintances of yours, aren't they?"
"I shot their father," Wax said, not looking up. "Twice." "I couldn't let it die," the book read. "It's not right. Hemology is good now, I figure. Says is both sides now, right? Ruin isn't around anymore."
"Are they likely to try to kill you?" Steris asked.
"Boris Jr. swore to drink my blood," Wax said. "Boris the Third, and yes, he's the brother of Boris Jr., don't ask, swore to, what was it, eat my toes? He's not a clever man." "We can use it. We should. Shouldn't we?"
"I'll just put them on the list, then," Steris said.
Wax sighed, looking up from the book. "You're going to invite my mortal enemies," he said dryly, "to our wedding."
"We have to invite someone," Steris said.
She sat with her blonde hair up in a bun, her stacks of papers for the wedding arrangements settled around her like subjects at court. Her blue-flowered dress was fashionable without being the least bit daring, and her prim hat clung to her hair so tightly it might as well have been nailed in place.
"I'm certain there are better choices for invitations than people who want me dead," Wax said.
"I hear family members are traditional."
"As a point of fact," Steris said, "I believe your remaining family members actually do want you dead."
She had him there.
"Well, yours don't. Not that I've heard, anyway. If you need to fill out the wedding party, invite more of them."
"I've invited all of my family, as would be proper," Steris said, "and all of my acquaintances that merit the regard."
She reached to the side, taking out a sheet of paper.
"You, however, have given me only two names of people to invite. Wayne, and a woman named Renette, who, you noted, probably wouldn't try to shoot you at your own wedding."
"Very unlikely," Wax agreed. "She hasn't tried to kill me in years. Not seriously, at least."
Steris sighed, setting down the sheet.
"Steris," Wax said, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be flippant. Renette will be fine. We joke about her, but she's a good friend. She won't ruin the wedding, I promise."
"Then who will?"
"Excuse me?"
"I have known you for an entire year now, Lord Waxillium," Steris said. "I can accept you for who you are, but I am under no illusions. Something will happen at our wedding. A villain will burst in, guns firing, or we'll discover explosives in the altar, or Father Bin will inexplicably turn out to be an old enemy and attempt to murder you instead of performing the ceremony. It will happen. I'm merely trying to prepare for it."
"You're serious, aren't you?" Wax asked, smiling. "You're actually thinking of inviting one of my enemies so you can plan for a disruption."
"I've sorted them by threat level and ease of access," Steris said, shuffling through her papers.
"Wait," Wax said, rising and walking over. He leaned down next to her, looking over her shoulder at her papers. Each sheet contained a detailed biography.
"Ape Manton, the DeShear boys, Rusts, Rick Stranger. I'd forgotten about him. Where did you get these?"
"Your exploits are a matter of public record," Steris said. "One that is of increasing interest to society."
"How long did you spend on this?" Wax asked, flipping through the pages in the stack.
"I wanted to be thorough. This sort of thing helps me think. Besides, I wanted to know what you had spent your life doing."
That was actually kind of sweet, in a bizarre, Steris sort of way.
"Invite Douglas Venture," he said. "He's kind of a friend, but he can't hold his liquor.
You can count on him making a disturbance at the after-party.
Excellent, Steris said. And the other 37 seats in your section?
Invite leaders among the seamstresses and forge workers of my house, Wax said. And the constables general of the various octants. It will be a nice gesture.
Very well.
If you want me to help more with the wedding planning...
No, the formal request to perform the ceremony that you sent to Father Bin was the only task required of you by protocol. Otherwise, I can handle it. This is the perfect sort of thing to occupy me. That said, someday I would like to know what is in that little book you peruse so often.
I... The front door to the mansion slammed open down below, and booted feet thumped up the steps. A moment later, the door to the study burst open, and Wayne all but tumbled in. Darius, the house butler, stood apologetically just behind him. Wiry and of medium height, Wayne had a round, clean-shaven face, and, as usual, wore his old rough's clothing, though Steris had pointedly supplied him with new clothing on at least three occasions. "Wayne, you could try the doorbell sometime," Wax said.
"Nah, that warns the butler,"
Wayne said. "Which is kind of the point."
"Beady little buggers," Wayne said, shutting the door on Darius. "Can't trust them. Look, Wax, we've got to go. The marksman has made his move."
"Finally," Wax thought. "Let me grab my coat." Wayne glanced towards Steris.
"Hello, crazy,"
he said, nodding to her.
"Hello, idiot,"
she said, nodding back. Wax buckled on his gun belt over his fine city suit, with vest and cravat, then threw on his mist coat duster. "Let's go," he said, checking his ammunition. Wayne pushed his way out the door and barreled down the stairs. Wax paused by Steris's couch.
"A man must have his hobbies," she said, raising another sheet of paper and inspecting it. "I accept yours, Lord Waxillium, but do try to avoid being shot in the face, as we have wedding portraits to sit for this evening."
"I'll remember that."
"Keep an eye on my sister out there," Steris said.
"This is a dangerous chase," Wax said, hastening to the door. "I doubt Maracy will be involved."
"If you think that, then your professional faculties are suspect. It's a dangerous chase, so she'll find a way to be involved."
Wax hesitated by the door. He glanced back at her, and she looked up, meeting his eyes. It felt as if there should be something more to their parting. A send-off of some sort. Fondness. Steris seemed to sense it too, but neither said anything. Wax tipped his head back, taking a shot of whiskey and metal flakes, then charged through the doorway and threw himself over the balcony railing. He slowed himself with a push on the silver inlays in the marble floor of the entrance hall, hitting with a thump of boots on stone. Darius opened the front door ahead of him as he raced out to join Wayne at the coach for the ride to... He froze on the steps down to the street.
"What the hell is that?"
"Motor car,"
Wayne said from the back seat of the vehicle. Wax groaned, hastening down the steps and approaching the machine. Maracy sat behind the steering mechanism, wearing a fashionable dress of lavender and lace. She looked much younger than her half-sister Steris, though only 5 years separated them. She was a constable now, technically, an aide to the constable general of this octant. She'd never fully explained to him why she would leave behind her career as a solicitor to join the constables, but at least she'd been hired on not as a beat constable, but as an analyst and executive assistant. She shouldn't be subjected to danger in that role. Yet here she was. A glint of eagerness shone in her eyes as she turned to him.
"Are you going to get in?"
"What are you doing here?" Wax asked, opening the door with some reluctance.
"Driving. You'd rather Wayne do it?"
"I'd rather have a coach and a good team of horses." Wax settled into one of the seats.
"Stop being so old-fashioned,"
Maracy said, moving her foot and making the devilish contraption lurch forward.
"Marksman robbed the First Union, as you guessed."
Wax held on tightly. He'd guessed that marksman would hit the bank 3 days ago. When it hadn't happened, he'd thought the man had fled to the roughs.
"Captain Reddy thinks that marksman will run for his hideout in the 7th octant,"
Maracy noted, steering around a horse carriage.
"Reddy is wrong," Wax said. "Head for the breakouts."
She didn't argue. The motor car thumped and shook until they hit the new section of paving stones, where the street smoothed out and the vehicle picked up speed. This was one of the latest motor cars, the type the broadsheets had been spouting about, with rubber wheels and a gasoline engine. The entire city was transforming to accommodate them. A lot of trouble just so people can drive these contraptions, Wax thought sourly. Horses didn't need ground this smooth, though he did have to admit that the motor car turned remarkably well as Marcy took a corner at speed. It was still a horrible, lifeless heap of destruction.
"You shouldn't be here," Wax said as Marcy took another corner.
She kept her eyes forward. Behind them, Wayne leaned halfway out of one of the windows, holding his hat to his head and grinning.
"You trained as an attorney," Wax said. "You belong in a courtroom, not chasing a killer."
"I've done well caring for myself in the past. You never complained then."
"Each time it felt like an exception, yet here you are again."
Marcy did something with the stick to her right, changing the motor's gears. Wax never had been able to get the hang of that. She darted around several horses, causing one of the riders to shout after them. The swerving motion pushed Wax against the side of the motor car, and he grunted.
"What's wrong with you lately?" Marcy demanded. "You complain about the motor car, about me being here, about your tea being too hot in the morning. One would almost think you'd made some horrible life decision that you regret deep down. Wonder what it could be."
Wax kept his eyes forward. In the mirror, he saw Wayne lean back in and raise his eyebrows.
"She might have a point, mate." "You're not helping." "Wasn't intending to," Wayne said. "Fortunately, I know which horrible life decision she's talking about. You really should have bought that hat we looked at last week. It was lucky. I've got a fifth sense for these things."
"Fifth?"
Marcy asked.
"Yeah. Can't smell worth a heap of beans. I—"
"There," Wax said, leaning forward and looking through the windscreen. A figure bounded out of a side street, soaring through the air, landed in the street, then launched himself down the thoroughfare ahead of them.
"You were right,"
Marcy said.
"How did you know?"
"Marx likes to be seen," Wax said, slipping vindication from her holster at his side. "Fancies himself a gentleman rogue. Keep this contraption moving steadily if you can."
Marcy's reply was cut off as Wax threw open the door and leaped out. He fired down and pushed on the bullet, launching himself upward. A push on a passing carriage sent it rocking and nudged Wax to the side so that when he came down, he landed on the wooden roof of Marcy's motor car. He grabbed the roof's front lip in one hand, gun up beside his head, wind blowing his mist coat out behind him. Ahead, Marx bounded down the thoroughfare in a series of steel pushes. Deep within, Wax felt the comforting burn of his own metal. He propelled himself off the motor car and out over the roadway. Marx always performed his robberies in daylight, always escaped along the busiest roadways he could find. He liked the notoriety. He probably felt invincible. Being an allomancer could do that to a man. Wax sent himself into a series of leaps over motor cars and carriages, passing the tenements on either side. The rushing wind, the height and perspective, cleared his mind and calmed his emotions as surely as a soother's touch. His worries dissolved, and for the moment there was only the chase. The marksman wore red, an old busker's mask covering his face, black with white tusks, like a demon of the deepness from old stories. And he was connected to the Set, according to the appointment book Wax had stolen from his uncle. After so many months, the usefulness of that book was waning, but there were still a few gems to exploit. Marx pushed toward the industrial district. Wax followed, bounding from motor car to motor car. Amazing how much more secure he felt while hurtling through the afternoon air, as opposed to being trapped in one of those horrible motorized boxes. Marx spun in midair and released a handful of something. Wax pushed himself off a lamppost and jerked to the side, then shoved Marx's coins as they passed, sending them out of the way of a random motor car below. The motor swerved anyway, running toward the canal, the driver losing control.
"Rust and ruin,"
Wax thought with annoyance, pushing himself back toward the motor car. He tapped his metal mind, increasing his weight 20-fold, and came down on the hood of the motor car. Hard. The smash crushed the front of the motor car into the ground, grinding it against the stones, slowing and then stopping its momentum before it could topple into the canal. He caught a glimpse of stunned people inside, then released his metal mind and launched himself in a push after Marx. He almost lost the man, but fortunately the red clothing was distinctive. Wax spotted him as he bounded up off a low building, then pushed himself high along the side of one of the city's shorter skyscrapers.